Rozier versus Brownell Tobin.
Approach.
Yeah.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the court and counsel, Justin Eichmann, appearing on behalf of the appellant in this case, Paula Crozier. She was the plaintiff in the case below. Appreciate your time in scheduling us this morning and your time in considering this case, as it is important to my client. This matter was originally pled as a breach of an employment contract, and I think, frankly, the first and probably the most important controversy arises with respect to whether a contract of employment actually existed. I will reserve a review of the facts as they become necessary throughout my argument here, other than I think initially to note, for purposes of this first argument, that we had an offer made in writing. There were directions on how it was to be accepted. It was accepted by counter signature. It was returned and delivered. The issue before the court then became whether that constituted a contract of employment. When I review the district court's rulings, there's an oral ruling out of the bench, and then there's a written ruling which follows that up. In comparing those, I think initially the court indicated that it did not find that there was any intent by the parties to enter a contract which would alter the plaintiff's at-will status. And in finding that way, I think the court took aim, at least initially, at some of the terms of the contract, indicating that the court believed that they were ambiguous. And specifically, I think the court labeled the duration of the employment as ambiguous. And for purposes of the court, the one sentence that I think it took aim at is as follows. This position is considered a 12-month position beginning May 5th, 2014, June 30th, 2015, with an annual salary of $55,000. As the court's aware, that the standard for ambiguity in a contract is whether or not those words are susceptible of at least two reasonable but conflicting interpretations of meanings. The district court didn't identify what those conflicting and reasonable meanings were, which just indicated that it was ambiguous in that regard. So in anticipating what the court's reasoning was, and frankly probably responding to the arguments that were made by Brownell Talbot as to the ambiguous nature of the contract, I think the first thing they took issue with, one of the things they took issue with is the identification of an annual salary. That would seem to indicate that this contract was strictly limited to a one-year period, an annual basis, 12 months. I don't believe that the inclusion of an annual salary figure identifies the term of this contract at all.
So just let me ask you, if your client were to have received the contract in a
I believe that when you put in there an indication of what the annual salary is, that is an indication of the rate at which you would be paid and the amount. So on an annual basis, should you pay $55,000? You can extrapolate that with a monthly basis, but what the monthly salary would be, you can extrapolate what the bi-weekly, the weekly, the daily salary is, frankly. So I believe when you indicate in a contract an annual salary, you need to identify that next time. The only thing you're doing is identifying the rate and amount of pay for the job that you're contracting for. So I think particularly in this case, because I think there's very clear language as to what the term is. There's some ambiguity about the exact day when it starts and the exact day when it ends, because it indicates May 5th, 2014 to June 30th, 2013. I think the other argument that was made that these terms are ambiguous is the fact that it identifies a 12-month position. Again, I think in light of the fact that you have a very clear beginning date and end date, I don't think the contract is ambiguous as to the length of it. Because I think a clear reading of the contract, I think, indicates that this 12-month language describes the position itself, not the term. The language of the contract says this position is considered a 12-month position. It doesn't say 12-month term. It says a 12-month position beginning May 5th, from this date on that. I don't think the terms were ambiguous.
In reading through the whole record, I now understand the 12-month versus 10-month.
Yes.
But if there are unambiguous terms that were not strictly with the length of contract or the topic,
correct.
How do we reconcile? How do we find the company? I mean, 12 months is 12 months, but the term is greater than 12 months.
Correct. Because I think it's in the reading of that sentence itself. When you read the sentence, 12-month describes the position, not the term. This position is a 12-month position. And then we go to the term, beginning May 5th, 2014, to June 30th, 2015. Obviously, it makes sense when you consider the extrinsic evidence, but you're correct, Your Honor. In initially looking at this and deciding whether it's ambiguous, we're not looking outside of that contract. But I believe the plain reading of that sentence is the 12-month is all scripted for the
without the outside help, how can you tell them?
By reading that sentence, that's the argument I'm making. By reading that sentence alone, this position is considered a 12-month position. Period. Or not period. I mean, it then goes on to identify the term. But I believe in reading that, the plain language of that agreement, 12 months only describes the position. Not, it doesn't say this position will last 12 months from May 5th to June 30th. It says the position is considered a 12-month position.
We disagree with this agreement on that term, that trickiness, as to duration of the client's employment. Does that mean that raises enough of a discrepancy that makes a contract, then not a contract, or still put that over the situation?
I believe that if the court were to find that this contract is ambiguous as to its terms, start date and end date. I think that is an essential element of a contract of employment. And if that's the case, then I think we default to at will employment if the court determines that the parties intended deep at will employment. I mean, if my second problem here with what the court did is first we have it determines that the document is ambiguous. I think once it determines the document is ambiguous, it needs to then look to the extrinsic evidence to figure out what the parties intended the document to say.
And this is flashback.
Absolutely. And this was decided on summary judgment. And I firmly believe, Your Honor, that the evidence, if there's conflicting evidence in this regard, I tried to outline that in my brief. There's evidence that my clients would be supervisors indicated that it wasn't that people at Brown L. Talbot in these positions had contracts. I've got a phone message from the head of school's assistant who was tasked with putting this document together, indicating, hey, call me back. Call me to your address. I'm preparing your contract. I've got the head of HR who confirmed that once we hit that term date, that June 30th date, a new document will be finished just as contracts are done. When one term ends, you can renew a second contract, and you can do that successively. Yes. I think you can have a contract which governs other terms of your employment other than your at-will status. And I think that's broken out in some of the cases that were cited, frankly, by both parties, where you get language in a contract which speaks to payment that would be received beyond the term of employment, or, you know, breaks out what the salary would be over a period of 5 years. If you remain employed, that's the agreement, and that's what should be paid. But you still remain in at-will employment, subject to firing at fire rates, the arguments, and employer. So I see I'm out of time. I do appreciate your time this morning and hearing this case. I would ask that reversed and revert back to the district court, either finding that the terms are not ambiguous, or at least finding that they, if they are ambiguous, that there are material issues of fact that need to ask to go to the trial back to the jury. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm here to support counsel. My name is Catherine Dittrich, and I am here today representing the defendant and appellee in this case, Toronto Public School. The parties both filed summary judgments on the matter of whether or not a contract exists. So it is clear that we agree that this is a matter of law to be decided by the court. It is also plaintiff's burden to show that there exists a valid contract and the terms of the contract. The parties also appear to agree that there exists a presumption of at-will employment in Nebraska, and absent a contract, you would default to the presumption of at-will. Under the clearly established case law precedent, specifically Wynn versus Beatrice Community Hospital, in order to overcome the presumption of at-will, there must be a clear and unequivocal intent to be bound by something other than at-will. And there is no such intent here in this case.
What about the term of employment?
So the term of the employment, as was discussed with my working counsel here, there are conflicting terms. The sentence at issue, it states that this position is considered a 12-month position beginning May 5th, 2014 to June 30th, 2015. So Winston has raised the fact that you have to first look at the plain meaning of the terms. And if you do that, you will see that those terms directly conflict in the same sense. So you have a 12-month position, and you have another time frame that specifies May 5th to June 30th.
Term ambiguous?
Yes, I believe that does make it ambiguous, and therefore you're required to look to extrinsic evidence to determine. Well, under the Blinn standards, that you have to have a clear intent as a matter of law to overcome the presumption. I believe the fact that it is ambiguous, the fact that you have to look to extrinsic evidence at all, makes clear that there is no clear intent of the parties to become bound by something other than
So is it your position that the intrinsic evidence proves that it was for a specific duration? We can't rely upon that to find a contract for a term?
If both parties were to agree that the extrinsic evidence, that there was a clear intent by which both of them would be, by which the employer would be bound, then I think you could look at extrinsic evidence. But the fact that the parties disagree, the fact that there are two different intents here, is insufficient to overcome the presumption of that.
So it can never be a fact question whether there is whether there are an employment or employee.
Well, I think there has to be a fact question of what did the parties say their intent was. Here the parties clearly, there's no dispute that Brownell got one thing, and the cleanest got half.
Employees from Rod and Tower and told plaintiffs that contractors be not prepared, everybody 12 months on their contracts.
There is a
reason why she relied on those statements as statements if there was an accident.
Sure, Your Honor. The statement that she was preparing the contract was made by an administrative employee, the secretary to the head of school. She later testified in her deposition that she did not intend to use the word contract. That was basically just a phone message where she said the word contract and was not intending to imply that this would be a legally binding contract.
Is that right person then?
Yes.
Okay,
the friend's statement, which is a dispute, you know, we dispute that and understand for the purpose of summary judgment that we have to consider that the plaintiff's version of the fact is true. But that goes back to your question, Your Honor, of saying, can you have a contract for at will employment? And I believe the answer is yes. That if you have a document that specifies the terms of employment, it can also specify that your employment is at will subject to the termination of the employer for any reason or no reason.
You just have to say that in
I don't believe that it does have to say that in the contract because under the case law precedent, that's the presumption. So in absence of a clear intent or something otherwise, then you go back to the presumption of the contract. And plaintiff's counsel is essentially arguing that you need to look to extrinsic evidence about one phrase, but not about the other. So he is taking the phrase of this is a 12-month position and saying, if you look at the extrinsic evidence, it shows that that was basically to distinguish between staff who work 12 months of the year and faculty who are scheduled to work only 10 months of the year for the academic year.
I can understand the evidence. He was saying that, he was saying 12-month position is not the same as 12-month duration.
Okay, so potentially that could be the document if you're saying that that's a position versus a duration. But again, we pose that it's unclear in the document, that the document could be susceptible to more than one meaning.
Why would your client have such an unclear document?
Well,
that's my question.
First of all, it wasn't reviewed by counsel. The second thing is if you look at the extrinsic evidence regarding the second phrase, that phrase that says from May to June 30th, the 14-month period, the evidence, extrinsic evidence from the testimony of Paul Eastman makes it clear that the point of having that in there was for budgeting purposes to specify that her salary was not going to change at the start of the fiscal year. They start the fiscal year July 1st, and all other employees have a salary that changes, increases July 1st. And so the reason why he put that in there was to specify your salary is not going to come up at the start of the fiscal year. It's going to remain the same for these 2 months and then for that following year, and which is why it's followed by the annual salary of $55,000. It admittedly was a quarterly drafted offer letter that was not.
Client grasped this letter, which I would assume they knew what they meant in the letter. It's accepted by the administrator here. And then you turn around and take possession. Well, it's really unclear. I don't understand how. I mean, don't we have to look at who the director of the document is?
That is true. And to be construed as against the drafter. However, you also have the body of law that says if a plaintiff in a breach of contract case has the burden of proving the existence of the contract and the terms of the contract. So this document, while it is unclear to us, it was clear to them at the time. It's not labeled.
Well, who's asking?
I'm sorry, clear to to me here that this is not a clear document, but was clear in the head of your draft of what was meant by 12-month membership and what was meant by May 5th.
Well, it's really not part of the evidence, what is clear to you, is it?
No.
What it means to you, what it means to matter.
You're right, Ron. I'm just answering your question right now. Right now, we're looking at this document here in hindsight, saying, well, it is unclear. If you look at the, I believe it's in the affidavit of opposing counsel that was produced in evidence in this case, there are additional documents, there are contracts from Ron Latell that specify that some employees do have written contracts that are labeled contracts, they're formatted as a contract. This is a very different document. This is simply a letter that states you're going to be employed for the position of the director of marketing, and here's what it's about.
But Mr. Kurt, you're not here for that. She wouldn't know that her letter is to prevent contract.
True. But the evidence that the judge was referring to about other employees saying, oh, we all have contracts, that's where that is coming from, that there are other documents at Darnell under which there are formatted documents that are labeled contracts that are given to the workers.
So that becomes factual issue. You're considering these facts as to whether or not they throw out the fact that we all have contracts, what that actually means, to be decided by the fact finder rather than by the law.
Well, if you look at the case law precedent, so for example, there's the case of Baheat versus Paper Corporation, where the employer had a written document that said you have a salary guarantee for each of 5 years, and it listed what that salary would be for 5 years. And the Court of Appeals determined, no, that is not sufficient to overcome the presumption of that will, because that simply states what the salary is going to be for a specific time. There's an additional case.
This case says that you were employed for a period from May back. June, and it's going to be paid at this rate. I mean, that's a specific term. If the fact finder,
because of that case law saying that you have to have a clear intent to overcome the presumption.
How much clear would you want to be? You're saying I'm hiring me for this period of time, I'm going to pay this much money.
Well, the offer letter doesn't say you're hired for that specific period of time. It says it's a 12-month position beginning on this date with the annual salary, meaning that your salary will go up.
Someday in May or someday in June?
Correct.
It's got the term of the contract, it's got the amount to be in the day, it's got when the day starts, when it's going to end.
But it has conflicting time frames.
That's what I'm saying. I'm talking about facts. You have a fact finder, and I determine those things based upon the other evidence. If they can establish all this, doesn't that create a problem? As far as this case.
I believe that according to the case law precedent, the Blinn case, the Beckett case, the Johnson versus Panhandle Cooperative case, state that documents such as these, in which case which specifically state what salary would be for a certain time frame, does not create a contract of employment as an IR law or a common presumption of that. And that's what we asked the court to affirm today, is that case law precedent and the court, district court's ruling. Thank you for your time. If there's further questions.
The parties didn't intend to change at will status. All that was intended here was that if you remain employed for 5 years, this is your place of instruction. That's all that was decided. That case, the Johnson case, are entirely different from what we're looking at here. Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you again.